Welcome to Plebs on Parade. I'm your host, Timmy Tether. Today we're talking to plebs about war in Iran. Is it good? Is it bad? What do plebs think? Let's find out. Once again, it's Timmy Tether here on location in Bethesda, Maryland. Our first guest is Jake from King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. Jake, what are your thoughts about the U.S. going to war with Iran on behalf of Israel?
Damn, I am not about this war. Donald Trump played my ass. I believed him when he said no more wars. Now he finna drag us into war with Iran? This has destroyed my trust in politicians. You can't believe nothing they say.
Jake feels betrayed by President Trump. Jake believed the promises of politicians not to drag the U.S. into more foreign Middle East wars. You hate to see it. Next is Chang Lee from Milwaukee. Chang, war with Iran. Is it good? Bad? What do you think?
Hello, Timmy. I hate shitcoins. I hate shitcoins even more than war. At first, I was very, very angry about war with Iran. But then, I see the shitcoin prices. Nuke. It make me very glad. If war makes shitcoins go to zero, you can call me Lindsey Graham.
Cheng hates war, but he hates shitcoins more. If shitcoins can't survive war with Iran, then count Cheng a supporter. Last is Sherry from Knoxville, Tennessee. Sherry, what are your thoughts about war in Iran?
I don't know, Timmy. It's all so abstract to me as someone who will never have to face the direct consequences of war. But I think we should draft boomers for this war and use the Social Security and Medicare savings from the boomers who die in Iran to buy Bitcoin for the Strategic Reserve.
Sherry thinks there's a silver lining here in that we can deploy a strategy to use war with Iran as an opportunity to buy budget-neutral Bitcoin for the Strategic Reserve. That's all for this edition of Plebs on Parade. I'm your host, Timmy Tether. Thanks for tuning in and see you next time.
Welcome back to Bugle Weekly. This is Rod Palmer. I'm here with Richard Greaser. We hope you had a nice weekend. We've been monitoring the situation for the past week and a half. Things are escalating, accelerating very rapidly. And the United States has entered the war, the Jewish war against Iran. President Donald Trump says we have not declared war against Iran, but their nuclear program. And Iran has threatened to escalate and retaliate. And most importantly, Iran has threatened to hire Jewish lawyers and seek legal action against the U.S. government. That has been their main talking point since the attack on the nuclear facilities. Either way, war seems imminent. I am ready to die in Iran for the Israeli government because Bitcoin has already won, and this will accelerate hyper-Bitcoinization one way or the other. Richard Greaser, how are you doing? Do you feel the same way? Are you ready for this conflict, this World War III part two, to escalate?
I'm not ready for it. It's making me really grumpy. I'm really grumpy about it all. And I'd like to be grumpy lately. I'd like to preface, I don't see this as the Jewish war. I see it as the boomer war. So I blame the boomers. So some of those boomers trying to perpetuate the war might be Jewish. But I think it's more of like it's a generational thing than it is like a religious or ethnic thing.
What makes you grumpier? Paper Bitcoin or World War III?
I definitely say World War III. I mean, there's some people out there that like are looking at World War III. They're initially kind of hesitant about supporting it, and then they're watching the price of shitcoins go down. And now they're in support of the war, essentially, because they think the greatest evil in the world is shitcoins or paper Bitcoin. Or I think killing people is worse than shitcoining, personally, and it makes me a lot grumpy.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, during World War II, the democracies of the West decided that dropping atom bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima was the ethical moral, righteous decision because it would prevent more conflict, more human deaths, more human suffering, and more war. And I think there is a case to be made that nuclear war, in the wake of the conflicts we have going on in the Eastern Hemisphere right now, if it reduces the amount of shit coining, it reduces the amount of unregistered securities that people are pump and dumping on retail. If we can reduce the amount of shitcoining in pump and dumps through nuclear war and drive shitcoins, especially Ethereum, to zero, I think there's a case to be made that it is worth supporting. Now, you take the other side. You think that death is, I mean, think about this. We have a protracted conflict without nuclear war. And this doesn't drive shitcoins to zero. And we have shitcoins and shitcoining and gambling and unregistered securities that are just constantly being debuted on Coinbase. Who is sponsoring these wars? You don't think it would be worth nuking it all to zero, so to speak, and literally to end this, you know, this debauchery of finance and shitcoining?
Yeah, because the shitcoins are a reflection of the population. And if you take Ethereum to zero, there's always going to be another shitcoin, whatever it is. Like, the shitcoins will exist until people stop being gay and retarded. And so I think the expectation should be, instead of starting wars to essentially destroy the stacks of the gay and the retarded people, is just expect people to be less retarded. And I think this is why it's really important, you know, to hold the boomers accountable, you know, because they're some of the biggest perpetuators of retardation in general. They're the most retarded generation, I think, in human history, as far as I know. And they're the ones fighting this war. One of the things that was proposed in the plebs on parade was for the boomers to fight their own wars. I think that's a really good idea. And I think that's the only, I mean, this is like what the boomers like to do, is they like to call people entitled, the younger generations entitled, for not just blindly doing their bidding for them. They're like, oh yeah, we don't agree with you because you're a bunch of retards. They're like, wow, you're entitled, and you're ungrateful. And it's just yeah, we are fucking ungrateful because you're a bunch of retards that are starting wars and doing stupid shit. So how about you go fight your own wars? You're the entitled ones.
We can get to the boomer problem here shortly, but I think I want to stay on this topic because shitcoins are cancer. Crypto is cancer. And what do you do with cancer? You use radiation to reduce it. Use chemotherapy, and you kill a lot of healthy, productive cells in the human body, but ultimately you're killing the cancerous cells, and you have to kill all the cancerous cells and get rid of it before the body, without killing too many healthy cells, so that the body can continue to flourish long term. And a nuclear war would be quite literally using radiation to kill cancerous cells on planet Earth, the shitcoiners, the shitcoin investors. And I think that nuclear war would go a long way to killing all the gay retarded people. And if we kill enough of them without killing the, you know, the entrepreneurs, the libertarians, the Christians, the you know, Bitcoin maximalists, paper Bitcoiners, if we have enough of those left over, we can rebuild at the end of this fourth turning. And I think that's the only way we're going to get past this, you know, paradigm of, we're even talking about Bitcoin dominance. It would just be Bitcoin dominance by default at this point. It would be 100% because the shitcoiners would go to zero.
I read a really interesting book called A World Without Cancer by G. Edward Griffin. And I don't really know what I think about it, but he presented a different idea of treating cancer besides chemotherapy, Which,
how does that align with Dr. Jack Kriz's medicine approach to cancer?
I'm sure it's probably pretty similar. But, you know, essentially the idea of it is instead of going in, you know, with these, you know, really hard, like I think the comparison of chemotherapy and radiation to nuclear weapons is, it makes a lot of sense. But nuclear weapons aren't the way to solve every conflict. You know what I mean? And that's one of the ideas and concepts, whether or not, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a journalist, so I'm not going to approve of any of the ideas that G. Edward Griffin stated in it, but it did present an interesting perspective of maybe going about a different way of dealing with the shitcoiners, which is you starve them. And that's one of the concepts that they present, you know, as a treatment for cancer, is going on these very strict diets, you know, with high vitamin intakes of certain types of vitamins. You eliminate sugar. The cancer feeds off of sugar. The free market essentially is this. I think the free market's a good way to starve the shitcoiners at the end of the
interesting
day.
Interesting. Interesting. So bad. Yeah.
And
I think a lot of people would disagree with you and say that the free market is the, you know, like the petri dish where shitcoins feed, where they thrive. And, you know, one thing, I know Dr. Jack Kriz, he's very critical of EMP and it damages your thyroid. Nuclear war could definitely cause damage to thyroids of the people who survive the radiation, the fallout. But I think it's almost a poetic, you know, a poetic outcome where the people who survive are Bitcoin maximalists who have damaged thyroids and subsequently have tallow bellies. You just have a civilization of tallow guts walking around spreading Bitcoin maximalism. The citadels would arise. You'd have citadels to protect you from the radiated zombie shitcoiners who are still looking for yield. They'd be outside the citadels or the walls, like instead of screaming brains, brains, they'd be looking for yield, yield. They'd want that paper Bitcoin yield because they'd be so hungry for it. But you want to starve the shitcoiners outside the citadel gates, and you want to starve them of tallow, starve them of sugar, but ultimately starve them of, all of these are kind of like metaphors for liquidity. And you think that if we dry up the liquidity, I still think that nuclear war is the best way to dry up liquidity. I don't think there's a better way. And Sly Goomba, a friend of the show, he doesn't believe that nukes exist. However, since World War II, we haven't had another world war. And it's because of the threat of the nuclear option. So if nuclear weapons have maintained peace throughout the world since the 1940s, you think that we need another option besides nuclear threats. But do you have any evidence that a world without nuclear war would be a more peaceful one than we have today?
Well, I definitely think it'd be more peaceful, but the consequences of attaining that peace are pretty devastating, in my opinion. It'd make it the options of finding potential real estate to settle your citadel a lot more limited, because a lot of the good real estate is going to be damaged. And on the topic of starving the shitcoiners, one of the best ways to starve them is just starve them of attention. And I think this is the thing that a lot of people get wrong about the shitcoiners, like Pledator, for example. Pledator says that they're the biggest risk in the world. He thinks they're the greatest threat to whatever his, you know, goals of how he wants the world to look at. And so he makes them into something much bigger than they are. And they feed off of that energy. They feed off of that energy. Somebody goes out there, you know, says, buy my shitcoin. And then you have an army of angry orange shells like Pledator coming after them. and it just markets them even more. And all the retarded people sitting on the sidelines look at that and they're like, wow, these guys on the internet, they're mean. They're not telling a very compelling story. Like, the shitcoiners must be right. And I think one of the keys is to starve them of attention and energy. And it's like, okay, well, if your philosophy actually has any merit to it, if you believe in Bitcoin and you're right, and the shitcoins are bad, and they're going to lose all their money on them, then maybe you should just like allow your philosophy to win via the market. But
okay.
I think the attitude that, you know, Plediter and a lot of these guys are coming from is an attitude of insecurity. At the end of the day, they feel really insecure about their position, probably because they aren't actually putting the work in. I don't think Plediter, it seems like the only reason why Plediter ever listens to a Bitcoin podcast is to complain about it. I don't know if you do.
No, yeah, I agree. I think it's like he's grumpy that, oh, I put my Nintendo Switch down in the middle of my game because somebody said this is pure signal. And I listened to it and it was this was they're shilling paper Bitcoin. They're shilling Bitcoin treasury companies. Are you kidding me? And he does nothing to complain, but you know, I'm listening to your argument and I like it. It sounds right. Right. It sounds like you think about the stories of book burning instead of competing for better ideas, they want to burn books, they want to censor information, and people see the book burning, they see the hysteria around this frantic effort to block out new information or whatever, bad information. And I think this is similar to when you take, when they're creating a bigger problem than is really there. I see a parallel with the anti-Semitism. They are making the Jewish people, the Israeli government, a bigger monster, a bigger threat, a bigger influence than they really are. And by constantly obsessing, by blaming all of these conflicts on the Israeli government and the Jews, it makes them out to be this giant, monster, this enemy, a boogeyman, if you will. And it's the same thing that the Nazis did. They create this boogeyman out of the Jews, and we're creating a boogeyman out of the shitcoins. And the answer is not to round up all the shitcoins and burn the blockchains and think that that's going to solve the problem, is what you're saying. It's my approach of nuclear war to starve the shitcoins is we will just find another boogeyman to blame later.
Yeah, I mean,
when we can't compete with strong ideas.
Should we be burning Roger Ver's book, Hijacking Bitcoin? I don't think so. I read the book. I thought it sucked. And I think if a lot of people read the book, they'll think it sucks too. But when people argue with Roger Ver about his book, it just kind of gives it more credit. At the end of the day, he's not that good of an author. Right. He didn't tell a really compelling story. I mean, it's just like, you know, he feeds this funnel of attention into, it's like, okay, Bitcoin's broken, so therefore do this kind of stupid thing in buying Bitcoin Cash. And it's just, it's giving these people a ton of energy and power that's not really, I don't think they deserve it. Yeah, I mean,
the solution is not to ban hijacking Bitcoin. It's to encourage people to actually read it. Because if they did, they would say, wow, this sucks. I can't believe Geist Juan wasted hours reading this for Bitcoin Audible. Like, this was not worth my time whatsoever. I can't believe this was constantly on my timeline and people were constantly complaining about it. Do you think the people that are complaining the loudest about Roger Ver's book have actually read it?
Probably not. I mean, this is kind of like people that complained about software too. A lot of critics, and this is something that Jason Lowry really was successful in marketing his book. This is a really good tactic. If you write a really bad book with bad ideas in it, and you've got people coming out of the woodwork to criticize you, and you can just ask them over and over again if they've read it, it'll definitely increase your book sales a lot. And then, right. So I think that's a pretty good tactic to learn from if you're a bad writer.
That's why I think that people should run knots for themselves, or they should try shitcoining for themselves, because I think you read all this hubbaloo and all this crazy back and forth online about, is Ethereum a shitcoin? Does Solana really suck? And they make this huge deal out of them. But if you've ever actually used them, you see for yourself how shitty they are and how terrible they are. And if you run Knots or you run Core and you don't run BugleCore, but if you just haven't used any of these products, you can make this, you can romanticize in a good or bad way the impact or the effective use case of these products. But once you actually try them and verify for yourselves, you can't really know. And until you do that, but what do you use some of the stuff and you find out for yourself that this shit sucks? I can't believe anybody wastes their time with this bullshit. But if you don't do that, you just won't have that certainty. And if you don't have that certainty, you have insecurity. And if you're insecure, you are constantly a nervous Nelly on the timeline. You're worried that, you know, to this morning we saw that Swan Bitcoin just announced some sort of Bitcoin treasury partnership with some other company. And Plunderer is no doubt going to freak out. But if he actually read the prospectus and probably invested, he would probably realize that that's definitely not a threat to Bitcoin. It probably sucks. But without that knowledge, first-hand knowledge, all you can do is worry. And worrying is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but you don't get anywhere.
It's a matter of how you want to spend your time, because you have a very limited amount of time. Most of these people that are complaining about the shit coins would be much better. They would have a much better time if they just spent more time listening to podcasts or started their own podcast. And I think reason why a lot of them haven't started their own podcast is because they're just not really interesting. They don't have anything interesting to offer. And it's like there's this whole segment of YouTube that exists, the Open Mouth Thumbnail Brigade. So they do open mouth thumbnails, commenting, doing reaction videos on other people's open mouth thumbnail videos. And so they build these audience by just critiquing other people and not really putting out anything interesting. And they're like the bottom feeders at the end of the day. And I feel like the peanut gallery on Twitter that's complaining about all this stuff. Like, you know, I'm grumpy. I'm grumpy too. I'm grumpy about the paper Bitcoin. I'm grumpy about, you know, the Zoomers with broccoli haircuts, and I'm grumpy about the boomers. I'm grumpy about the wars. But I think it's also important, you know, to pick what I do with my time. It's like, what's my goal here? Is my goal here to just be defined by being grumpy or trying to be like a Bitcoin podcaster or a journalist?
Yeah.
Which is going to help me smoke more cigarettes at the end of the day, being grumpy and just complaining about everything, or like actually like trying to be focused on things that matter. And
my parents are boomers, but my father was, he's a digitally native boomer. He got on the internet as soon as possible, and he raised me. He always told me that if you post open mouth thumbnails on YouTube, you're inviting the peanut gallery to put words in your mouth. And that's what I've always tried to live by. The more open now thumbnails you post, the more opportunity you're giving shitcoiners and trolls and the Russian spies, whoever's manipulating opinion on the internet, you're giving them the opportunity to put words in your mouth, and you don't want to do that. So you just want to avoid that, but you're right. And you talk about this, you talk about paper Bitcoin making you grumpy. And if paper Bitcoin makes a lot of people grumpy, I did an impromptu poll on Friday. I said, the list of the top five people who paper Bitcoin makes them grumpy. And you were on that list. You were number four, along with Predator, Odell. Odell was posting on Noster that X is for paper Bitcoin chat. Noster's for on-chain Bitcoin chat. But here's the thing. I'm glad you brought this up, because you can either being grumpy about something you can't control is a coping mechanism, or it is a substitute for, and you alluded to this, the lack of action. So instead of being grumpy, or when you feel grumpy, it's kind of like mindfulness meditation. Instead of being grumpy, you feel the grumpy feeling and you let it pass. And you say, why am I feeling grumpy? And you kind of answer the question. I'm feeling grumpy because I'm not listening to enough Bitcoin podcasts. Because if I was listening to enough Bitcoin podcasts, I wouldn't feel grumpy, because I would anticipate this thing that is coming, this thing that is making me feel grumpy, because I was caught off guard. I was unaware that paper Bitcoin was going to be such a popular trend. I was unaware that shitcoins were not going to die last cycle. I was unaware. It caught me off guard. And this is why people were very upset about Teddy Bitcoin's winning Maxi Madness. It made people very grumpy because they didn't see it coming. They didn't see the civil attack coming. They didn't see paper Bitcoin coming, but it did. And it did come. And there's nothing they could do about it. In hindsight, instead of being reactionary and grumpy, it's time to listen to more Bitcoin podcasts.
Okay. I mean, you feel the grumpiness, and you have a choice of what to do with that grumpiness. Are you going to stay in the place of grumpiness? Or are you going to move on to something? What the grumpiness is it's a way to identify things that you find problematic. But if you just focus on the problem the whole time, you're just feeding it. At the end of the day, you're making the cancer worse. And I think that's one of the keys. We have a lot of bad examples. Like I didn't mind being on that list. I kind of enjoyed being on that list with the other grumpy folks. But like, I think I have a very different approach than some of those other grumpy individuals, for sure, with how I live my life. I mean, they're all cigarette deficient, but yeah, out of curiosity, Rod, I don't know. What are your political pronouns? What would you identify as?
Yeah, are you talking about like GOP, DEM, LIB? Like what are political pronouns? Like, can you give me an example of what you're talking about?
Well, I'm a cigarette capitalist at the end of the day. And so, like, what that means is I believe in the liberty to smoke cigarettes freely where I want to. And I believe in the ability to, like, own shit and sell shit without the communists coming and stealing it. So that's, like, the cigarette part, and then the capitalist part kind of is the...
Sure.
It's the my philosophy in a nutshell. And I think everybody's political pronouns are different. Like, being a Republican, being a Democrat are kind of like...
I'm a pioneering minarchist. I think that we should have some collective efforts or some collective cooperation to maintain the border and maintain a low entropy, high productivity environment for areas, ideas, literal physical property that have been discovered on the frontier by the pioneers. But I think anybody who voluntarily chooses to listen to 40 hours per week and beyond, and to go beyond the pleb citadels into the frontier, that the government should stay out of their way, let them smoke cigarettes, let them experiment with new technology, let them experiment with new ideology. And in that free market frontier, if those ideas, if those ideologies, if those actions fail, they serve as an example to those who come behind them as what not to do or what to do. It provides a framework of success. So let the pioneers pioneer on the frontier, but separate the frontier from the settled lands. Let that be demarcated so people have the choice. Do I want to stay in this relatively low entropy environment? Do I want to stay here and investigate for Bitcoin? Or do I want to venture out but I need to know where that boundary is, because if you don't know where that boundary is, there's just a lot of risk. But if you want to take that risk, you just also don't get any safety net. You must know that this risk you're taking may be, there's nobody that can save you. Only you, beyond this point, the only person who can save you is yourself. Once you go beyond this point, we're not sending a rescue party. We're not sending money. We're not printing more money on the printer. You go beyond this point, only you can save yourself. But if you stay on this other side, there is a relative cooperative effort that you can join to try to help you survive. But that's how I guess a pioneering minarchist.
It's very interesting definition. Yeah, I think this is it's a good practice for everybody to be. I think people need to think more about their political pronouns. And
yes, it's time to redefine those, because I don't think if somebody calls himself a Democrat today or a Republican or a Libertarian, I don't think that is a useful term. It's just like if somebody calls you a racist, not a useful term anymore. It just means that they disagree with you about something and they're using that to try to slander you. If they call you a Republican or a Democrat or a socialist or a fascist, I don't think that those are useful terms anymore, because we don't have tight definitions. It's too ambiguous of a term. It's used too irresponsibly. And I think we have to define our own terms and define ourselves. So that if people say that you're this word, anything that rhymes with ist or ism, that it is, I'm be like, no, I'm not. I'm very public about my beliefs, and this is what I am. Because a Republican now could be Lindsey Graham, who wants World War III. It could be somebody who is more of a populist who wants to abolish free trade and have protectionist economic policies that are pro-worker. I mean, now you've got the most influential labor unions in the country endorsing Republicans, and you have the Cheney family endorsing Democrats. I don't think any of these are useful terms. I think we have to redefine all of these terms.
They're terms all that have all been defined and created by the boomers at the end of the day. So if you're a younger individual, like think about how much of a cuck and loser JD Vance is, because JD Vance essentially, he's one of the younger guys, right? And he's tied himself into being essentially the promoter of legitimacy of Donald Trump, who's a boomer. All these young people in the Trump administration are going there and they're promoting the boomers. Like, they have legitimate opinions. The boomers fucking suck. They're all retarded. They instituted smoking bans. Now they're starting wars that they're unwilling to fight for themselves. And one of the ways to reject that is coming up with your own political pronouns and not letting them define where you are ideologically, because this has been an issue, a really, really troubling issue that has happened over and over again. It's like, you know, when the Bitcoin maximalists get upset at the shitcoiners, well, who's defining the conversation? Who's setting the parameters of the argument? Well, it's typically the shitcoiners, because the maximalists are being reactionaries. They're not setting the conversation. In the same way, we cannot allow the boomers to set the conversation, define where we're talking from. And one of the ways to do that is to reject all of their labels that they give us. I'm not a libertarian. Right. I'm not an anarchist. I'm a cigarette capitalist. Like,
they're not an isolationist. They love to throw those terms out there. If you're against something, that means if you're against their definition of a word, that means you are for their definition of another word that doesn't even make sense. You don't even get to define.
I'm not an anti-Semite. I just don't like boomers like Netanyahu starting wars. I'm not
right.
I'm not a the Ted Cruz Tucker Carlson debate, that was like a big thing that happened last week. That was last week, right? It came out on like Monday, I think. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I mean, that was something, you know, Ted Cruz kept on trying to bring these boomer arguments and defining Tucker Carlson. And I would say Tucker Carlson, you know, I would give him like a C plus on that debate or interview. I would give Ted Cruz probably like a D minus. He did pretty bad. So Tucker came out the winner. They didn't really talk about anything that mattered. I think they both agreed that war with Iran was completely necessary. But Tucker believed that in order to invade Iran, Cruz should actually know a little bit about the country. That seemed like the point of contention in the debate. Cruz didn't believe so. He didn't think he needed to know anything about the country to invade it. Such a boomer perspective, but
right.
We have to take these labels that they give us, because, you know, this is like, you know, in many ways it's like rebelling against your parents. That's what rebelling against the boomer generation is. And like rebelling against your parents is very, it's an important part of your childhood, because in many ways it's just like testing the things that they taught you. It's about testing the boundaries. Exactly. It's about getting an identity for yourself aside of what your parents have just kind of instilled in you and exploring. It's about going into that time of your life where you're an early pioneer in many ways. You're learning how to live as an adult. Doesn't mean everything that your parents have taught you is completely retarded. But you'll find that out as you rebel. You'll go and make a mistake and then be like, oh shit, my parents were right. And hopefully it's not a catastrophic mistake. Hopefully your parents have taught you well enough. But like, this is a process that needs to happen with the boomers, where there needs to be a rebellious energy of like, you motherfuckers are all senile, trying to control everything and start wars that you're just going to hand down. And
this is 100% correct. So we talked about earlier, when we're grumpy, it is an evidence of either we're unprepared for the information we've received, or we're unprepared to deal with it. And this is why Sherry, one of the plebs on parade interviewers, gave us really good advice for how we can handle this information. So you talked about this rebelliousness against the boomers. This is part of the problem we have as a society. It seems like most people agree that the boomers are the problem, but the problem is that we are unprepared to deal with it, because the boomers are our parents. The boomers are our grandparents. If we take away their Social Security, we take away their Medicare, we take away their the assets that they have spent so many years, for the past 40 or 50 years accumulating for essentially, you know, no effort, but they printed money and destroyed the economy for us, because we don't want to punish our parents and grandparents. We just want to punish everybody else's parents and grandparents. But the other problem is, every story, every movie, it is based off of, for the most part, this hero's journey, this trope that was developed. You go back to the Odyssey and Homer, and it is the hero's journey of the protagonist of the show. Like, they have a problem and they go and they find themselves, they overcome the obstacles of their generation, of their life. And the millennials are, what are they known for? It is the safe space generation, the sensitive snowflakes, the participation trophies. The boomers nerfed our world and prevented us. They tried to make us plebs for life. We want to be pioneers. We wanted to go out into the frontier and define our own pronouns. That's what we've been doing. We've been defining our own pronouns. You say, I'm not this gender ideology that you've made me grow into. I have my own pronouns. I have my own gender. I have my own sexuality. I'm pansexual. I'm not just heterosexual or homosexual. We're trying to define our own terms. And instead we're litigating problems that have been solved for millennia. people solve all these problems. We're trying to reinvent the wheel in defining our own identities within the pleb safe space instead of going outside into the frontier and redefining the world from that vantage point. So what do we do now? If the boomers want war, we draft the boomers for war. You don't need to do 100 push-ups and be able to do pull-ups and run 5 miles to fight in a modern war. Modern warfare is fought with drones and missiles and information warfare, but you still need bodies in the trenches. Those can be boomers. It's working for Ukraine. Ukraine has trenches full of boomers, and they've held the Russians back, and the Russians have trenches full of boomers because they've run out of everybody else. And this also solves the debt problem, because the unfundable liabilities of Social Security and Medicare are far outweigh just about every other cost that we're going to have as a country, other than the interest paid on the national debt. But who are we paying that interest on the national debt? We're paying it to boomers who hold bonds. So if we send these boomers, we draft them into the war, we send them to Tehran, we send them to these trenches, some of them are going to die. But just like COVID, it's going to be the people who were probably going to die in the next 5 to 10 years anyway. And then we have all these savings for Social Security payments, Medicare payments, interest on the national debt payments. And now we finally have our budget neutral solution to buying Bitcoin for the strategic reserve. We're not going to sell the gold in Fort Knox. We were going to have an audit of Fort Knox, but there's no gold in there. Otherwise, we would have an audit. So there's no gold to sell. There's nothing to sell. The only thing we can do is send the boomers to be mulched in the trenches, and all the promises we've made to them for interest payments, Social Security and Medicare payments, we save those and we buy Bitcoin for the strategic reserve. And that prevents you, once you have a solution, once you have a framework for how the future plays out, you stop being grumpy. Think about the people on the Mayflower. They're coming over from Europe. They want to be pioneers. And every day they come out of their bow and they've got scurvy and they wish they had some lemons, some vitamin C, and they're feeling crappy, and they look out and they just see more ocean. And they don't know if they were ever going to find land. But once they have maps, once they know, 2 more weeks, we come to our destination. The future will play out predictably. We have a plan for this. Their scurvy, their grumpiness, it all disappeared. The grumpiness over paper Bitcoin, it all disappears. Once you know how this all plays out. And I think, I say this is a plan for what we do with the boomers. It's not my plan. I think that this is how it's going to play out. I don't think that it's even voluntary, honestly.
Yeah. If there's people that are going to be dying in wars, it should be the people primarily trying to start and support the wars. And I think that's just the most logical thing possible. And it's always the boomers. The boomers are the root of the problem every single time, every single war for the last while.
Right. The Russians, they're using prisoners. They're using vagabonds. The Ukrainians are using the people who stayed in Ukraine, which means that, it's the people who are the most problematic. Send them to the front lines. Send the boomers to the front lines. There's going to be an adjustment period. It is going to, Outback Steakhouse, Red Lobster, all these consumer brands that boomers love, they're going to lose customers. They're going to disappear, but we're going to replace them on the back end with tallow fries, with beef steaks, with, these natural healthy products, sunnier balls. We're going to send all the sunscreen consumers, the boomers, to the front lines. And we're going to replace it. This is the fourth turning. We're tearing down the institutions. We're rebuilding our own. We're tearing down the pronouns and the definitions, political definitions, and we're rebuilding our own.
It's moving away from the collectivist nonsense into the idea of the individual. Like, if you listen to Aaron Redwing on What Bitcoin Did, that was a pretty good interview, mostly just because Aaron's great. But you know, she talked most of the time, so you didn't have to listen to the British funny talker that much, which was nice. But she's talking about this age of Aquarius moving into the age of, away from this kind of collectivism into the age of the individual. And I think defining your political pronouns is just a step in becoming self-actualized as an individual at the end of the day. I don't think you can, there's no way that you can reach the level of self-actualization if the boomers are defining your pronouns for you. And like, right. The wokes tried to do this with gender, and I think they got it wrong. Like, they were on the right track, and this is the problem.
Exactly.
This is a problem with people that, you know, try and create any social change in the world that don't listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. It's like, they might be on the right track, but they're going to end up in the completely wrong place. And so while it's important for everybody to have their pronouns defined, it's more so like, what do the political pronouns represent? It's not an identity thing. It's more a reflection of what your values are at the
right.
end of the day.
And you're 100% right here. They were on the right path. They were onto something, but they let the boomers frame the problem, and they tried to find a solution based on the problematic framing. So why did they fail? Because the boomers were hypocrites. The boomers define what it means to be a patriot, but the boomers were the generation who are the least patriotic. They dodged the draft. They spat on the troops when they came home from war. They didn't want to be any part of this. The boomers tried to define the human family, or the nuclear family, excuse me. They tried to define gender roles and parental roles and the platonic ideal of a mother and father. But what did the boomers do? The boomers they went out to get raw milk or a pack of cigarettes, and they never came home to their family. They just disappeared. They didn't take child support. They didn't help the women raise the family. And the boomer women have the most abortions of any generation before or after them. They're hypocrites. They tried to define what a family role, what a good mother, what a good father is, but they didn't live up to it. They didn't live up to being patriots. They didn't live up to the millennial wokes, they say, well, being a man just means wearing a suit and being grumpy all day. So that's what I'm gonna put on men's clothes and be grumpy on TikTok. That's what it means to be a man. Or to be a woman, it just means I'm gonna wear a lipstick and wear a dress. That's all it means to be a woman. You don't have to actually, there has to be no genuine, authentic lived experience or action that's behind it. It's just all aesthetic. So I can just change my aesthetic, because that's all the boomers did. They defined what it means to be anti-Semitic. They defined what it means to be racist. They defined what it means to be isolationist. They defined what it means to be Republican and Democrat. And they didn't live up to any of the standards that they promoted. But the solution is not to redefine what the boomers' definitions of terms were. The solution is to go onto the frontier and redefine your ideology, your political pronouns, your political opinions. Stop using boomer words. Start using your own. But if you want to be more successful than the boomers, if you want your kids to actually give a fuck about you and respect you, it has to be legitimate. It has to have proof of work behind it. Otherwise, they're just going to say, what your definition of a man, well, my definition is that is just aesthetic only. I'm just going to change the word around. I'm going to reverse it and throw it in your face, but that won't work either.
Totally. Well, kind of wrapping this up. I do think grumpiness is important, but I think how you use grumpiness is kind of whether it's productive or unproductive. And when you look at the people that came to the new world on the Mayflower, grumpiness was the inciting event for them. They were looking around at how gay Europe was, and they got grumpy, and it led to action. It led to productive action of going somewhere else and settling. And if you're grumpy, this is what I would challenge you. You know, these pioneers, these pilgrims that came to the New World, began settling it, they were grumpy individuals. That was the inciting action for them. But there were a lot of people that were grumpy that just stayed there in Europe and just complained about it, adding nothing productive to any of the conversation. Grumpiness without any sort of productive action is just a waste of energy and time. You might as well just turn on Netflix, turn off your brain, eat some potato chips, vape.
Grumpiness without action is how you get a stagnant economy. It's how you get sent to jail for memes.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like grumpiness isn't bad. It's just what you do about it. And I don't think, and the nice thing about like action and being an active participant in your life is you can channel the grumpiness into something else. The grumpiness leads to something meaningful. You can build things based on grumpiness. You start out grumpy, you start building, and then you're not grumpy anymore because you created something cool and you feel good about it instead of just allowing, you know, like shitting on the boomers for not building exactly what you wanted them to build for you. You know, that's kind of the difference.
And if you don't use your grumpy feelings towards a positive end, you run the risk of becoming a grouch. You go from being grumpy to being a grouch. And if you're a grouch, I mean, it's all throughout culture. You'd be like Oscar the Grouch from Sesame Street. You will live in a trash can and you will be grumpy for the rest of your life. You will be a grouch for the rest of your life. Or you can turn your grumpiness into positive. You can be like Matt O'Dell. You can start your own Bitcoin, paper Bitcoin venture capitalist company. And you can turn that around. Stay ahead of the grumpiness. Don't be like Pleder. Pleder will be like Oscar the Grouch if he doesn't turn it around.
Pleder shares a lot of similarities to Mike Brock, in my opinion. Mike Brock is a great example of being a grouch, being unproductive. It definitely was an interesting week. It was a crazy week. I had a good time this weekend. I went and hung out at, I think the proper term for it is the Paznian consulate. And I'm not going to go into too many details, but I was hanging out with Rayo, bought some non-KYC books. If you've never had the opportunity to buy some non-KYC books, it's a good experience. I'd encourage you to do that. I shitcoined a little bit. I did buy the books with Monero, but I feel fine about it. I failed a purity test again, but it was good purity test to fail, in my opinion, or it was an acceptable way to fail it. But going into the boost, we got Noah Grumman, first boost, 6,666 sats, says, thanks for the shout out and blowing my cover. I prefer to keep my defense contracting and musicianship separate, but here we are monitoring the situation. Orange pilling tour continues underground. I don't remember what we were talking about in last week's boost. I think that's probably what she's referencing. Do you remember blowing her cover?
No, we just talked about Noah and Stardust a lot on the podcast, and about the orange pilling tour they were going on because they couldn't go to Prague.
Yeah, I hope they were able to convert some people in the bomb shelters this past week.
Yeah, don't be grouchy in Tel Aviv. Be proactive. Be orange pilling. Use those opportunities when the hypersonic missiles are dropping, and all, but most importantly, be safe over there.
Yeah. She was, she did a really cool stream that I watched on Zapstream last night, doing vocal practice. I thought that was pretty cool. It's cool to see talented musicians using Noster and these tools.
Oh yeah. The next boost, 521 sats from Doom Satoshi. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your time, Doom Satoshi. Thank you for taking time to listen to it. But it is nice as a podcaster to be thanked for the time it takes for us to record and produce these episodes.
Yeah, thank you for spending your time listening. Pies, 100 sats is happy Padre Day. I'll smoke a blunt for you guys. Well, thank you. Looks like Double Boost saying the same thing. And then 100 Cent's saying Buster Cherry, smiley face. Yeah, Buster's a good addition to the team. Great reporter. I think that I like the dynamic forming between him and Kaylee. I think that's been good.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been great. Your feed here is a little different than mine, so I'm trying to keep up here.
Yeah, I don't know why that is.
Is late stage Hoddle's on here for 10,000 sats? There he is. Yeah. Dan, y'all be so disappointed when you finally meet me at Lake, we was talking about Lake Satoshi where we talked about meeting him. I don't know what he means by that, but I don't think so. I think I'm pretty stoked to meet late stage and excited to smoke a non-KYC cigarette. I don't know what he means by disappointed. I can't imagine that I will be disappointed when I meet late stage.
Yeah, it's super weird how the fountain booths are out of order here. I don't know what to make of that. I'm not going to be disappointed late stage. I'm always excited. I mean, late stage, I was looking at the stats. I think late stage has been recently one of the biggest funders of our cigarette money. How could you be disappointed when somebody keeps on giving you cigarette money to meet them in person? And it's a pretty exciting event. We'll definitely smoke some cigarettes together.
Absolutely. And then I don't even have this one on my feed, but it says he's... he didn't purposely gobble boost, but he boosted his 5,000 more sats. Probably found the future won't have video UX. The current timeline still has shitty UX UI. Are you getting double the sats? I think so. My wallet is full right now. My wallet is full and my heart. My wallet is full of sats. My heart is full of gratitude from you, late stage Hoddle.
This UI is actually interesting. This 5,000 sat boost is actually on one of the old episodes on the Orange Pill Pioneers. It just showed up in the feed for some reason.
Huh.
So some of these, I'll stop scrolling down because these are on old episodes. So we don't need to go through those. We got Blizza for 1,010 sat says keeping the tradition alive. Well, thank you very much, Blizza. Hopefully, we'll see you at Lake Satoshi. I don't know. I don't know if Blizzard goes to things like that, but that's one of the events I'm the most excited about. That's coming up here pretty soon. I think it's August 1st and 2nd in Michigan.
3-6 weeks from now. I tried to buy my ticket online. The payment, the Bitcoin payment does not work. Sounds like you can pay when you get there. Either way, I'll be there. Whether or not I get a ticket beforehand or not.
Yeah, this is going to be my first Lake Satoshi. I've heard it's a really good time from John and, some of the people affiliated with Ungovernable Misfits. If you don't know what Lake Satoshi is, Lake Satoshi is the premier gathering of Bitcoin podcast listeners in rural Michigan. And, people hang out, smoke cigarettes, talk about Bitcoin podcasts. Sounds like exactly where I want to be, people I want to be hanging out with.
Last one's BTC on board, LNANS or CTV, 300 sats, thumbs up. No lightning emojis from BTC on board this week, but consistent. Yeah, man, he's always here. Thank you, BTC on board.
Absolutely. Well, before we wrap up the show, thank you, everybody, for the boost. We got some things cooking. I think it's just there's a lot of stuff that we're doing that's taking a little bit of time in the development pipeline. We're getting creative. We're going to be on the road doing some live shows in the future that we'll keep you posted on that I'm really excited about. Nothing solidified yet to announce, but as soon as we can, we will. So be ready for that. We've got a lot of things in the pipeline that I'm really excited about. You got anything you're really excited about, Ron, that you got cooking?
Nothing I'm ready to announce yet, but always cooking, always working and being creative and looking for more ways to supply people with pioneering high entropy content.
Yeah. BTC Prague happened this last week. Neither of us went. It's in Europe. I'm trying to avoid Europe, but
Satoshi Pit, Peter Todd teed in the the mempool, the literal mempool that they had, as one of the Justin Batchelor said that this is the premier Bitcoin conference now. So, don't trust Justin Batchelor on that. Verify for yourself. But BTC Prague is one of the ones I've been hoping to make it to. So maybe next year. I think top priority for me next year is to make it to, Bitcoin Rodeo in Calgary. But if I can make it to Calgary, hang out with you Canadian Bitcoiners and BTC Prague, I will be there.
When is that? When is the Calgary event?
Bitcoin Rodeo is next month. I think it's early to mid-July. Our buddy Sly Goomba, he's going to be on a panel up there, and he's going to be given a perspective on he being an orange cell in Canada or something like that. I don't know. It's something. He's doing a panel up there.
I don't think I'm going to make it to that one this year, but that would be cool to...
Not this year, no. Yeah, but I do want to make it up there. I want to go to Banff National Park, Lake Louise, or whatever it's called. Go to Calgary, get some steak with Dave Bradley, and meet some of those guys. There's some cool Canadian Bitcoiners, and Calgary is literally the only place in Canada that I really want to visit. Alberta in particular. So I don't really want to go to Toronto or Vancouver or... You know, Montreal is pretty nice. I went there for something a few years ago, but it's too French for me.
Yeah. I might be more excited about going if the Trailer Park Boys cast was going. I think those guys are pretty great. If you got
Bubbles, that would be awesome.
There, yeah. If Orange you got Bubbles. I mean, imagine Julian doing a keynote speech. It's something I think the Canadians really have to figure out. They got to go and orange pill the Trailer Park Boys, because I think that would help them in their endeavors quite a bit with moving money around. It you know, they go to prison at like the end of every season. Imagine if the plot of the story was, instead of them having to start from scratch when they get out, it was just a forced hodl and they just get really rich.
Yeah, that's usually, that's part of the plot is usually they've got custodians who lose their money when they go to jail. They don't have Bitcoin podcasts to listen to when they're in jail. But one thing that Trailer Park Boys has always been ahead of the curve is promoting smoking cigarettes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you got anything else before we wrap up, Rod?
No, I just think consider, before you virtue signal about current political events, consider the second order effects. Nuclear war means shitcoins nuke. Is that a net positive or is that not? Me and Richard disagreed on that today. What we did agree on is bring back the military draft, but change it so that you have to be, it's between the ages of 60 and 80. Boomers only.
Bombs are rain. Times are changing, masses raging. What is reality? Cars are burning, it's the fourth turning. People hurting, what is the malady? I'd love to change the world, but it doesn't want to change. While it's all burning, some are learning.